Okay. So thank you, as usual, to Zeifens for having me, Steve for organizing, for the dedication as well. Okay. The topic that I want to talk about today has always been practical, but has become ever more practical and ever more difficult. And that's the question of how do we manage our time at work? What's legitimate to do at work that isn't work-related? Taking personal phone calls, checking email, social media, whatever the case may be, which the increase of ease in communication technology has made it harder for us to avoid, to stay away from our phones, even when it doesn't have to do with work. And you know, this is a problem that employers are and employees are dealing with in all fields. The question is really what are the standards? What is legitimate? What can you do during work hours and maintain your legal or ethical responsibilities to your employer? So the first thing to note is that the Torah is particularly clear that whatever standard it is that is demanded of commitment from an employee to their employer, that standard must be maintained regardless of whether your boss is a nice guy. Right? It doesn't matter, right? Some people have this feeling that, you know, if my boss is, and I'm sure this is not a problem here, but I'm, you know, theoretically in a place where someone's boss may be unreasonable sometimes, people naturally feel if my boss is unreasonable, so then it's more legitimate for me to cut corners or whatever the case may be. The first thing, the first sort of ethical principle that the Torah sets out, clearly this is not true. The commitment that you have to your job is quite high, and it doesn't matter whether your employer is a nice guy. And I'm going to give a biblical example and then a Talmudic example. One is a biblical example, and this is from Jacob, from Yaakov, from the third of the patriarchs, who had a horrible employer for a very long time, his father-in-law. Laban, his father-in-law, Laban, the first time he goes, he agrees to work with him for 7 years to marry his daughter, to marry Rachel. Then he's tricked on the night of his wedding. He's given the other daughter, so then he agrees that he'll work another 7 years for Rachel again. By the end, after 14 years, he's now married to two of Lavan's daughters, to Rachel and Leah. And then in the next 6 years, he's working for a payment. And he negotiates with his employer, with Lavan, what he's going to be paid. And as the Torah goes on to tell us, he keeps switching his salary on him. Yaakov has very low demands. He says, I only want the speckled animals or the striped animals. And each time Laban removes the speckled animals from the herd so that no new speckled animals will be born. This goes on over and over again, but God performs a miracle with a little bit of intervention from Yaakov, and the children are born in exact to fit the parameters that Yaakov had set out. He becomes very wealthy, and that's the story. As he's ready to leave, at some point he's had enough. Yosef is born, his son Joseph is born. It's time to leave. And he calls his daughters together, and his wives together, the daughters of Lavan, and he explains why it's time to go. And he says, "Vatena yidaten, ki v'kol kochi avati avichen. You know that I worked for your father as hard as I could. Va'avichen heitelbi ve'achlifet maskurti aseret monim v'lo netano elokim lara imadi. And your father's cheated me. He changed my wages time and time again. But God would not let him do me harm." And then later on, when he's talking to Lavan, right, after outlining to his wives that he had the worst employer in the history of the world, yet he says, Trefa lo eviti elecha, anochi achatenom yadid tivakshena gnuvati yom gnuvati laila. I went above and beyond. If I was the shepherd on your animals, and they were torn up by beasts, so I never brought you the torn up animal. I paid for it out of my own pocket. And if something was stolen during the night, I paid for it. If it was stolen during the day, I paid for it. Hayiti vayom And the scorching heat ravaged me by day, and frost by night, and sleep fled my eyes. And he tells him, look, I was as committed as could be. Heat, cold, theft, I would make it up. It didn't matter. I worked as hard as I could because I was hired to be the shepherd, to be the guardian of these animals, and therefore I did my job. And this story becomes a model in halachic literature for the notion that principle number one is whatever we decide, whatever it turns out your ethical commitments are to your employer are, those commitments do not depend on how nice, how ethical even your employer is. They are functions fundamentally of the employer-employee relationship. And Maimonides, in number two, takes this from the narrative in the Bible to law. And he says, "Kederach shemusar balabayit shelo yigzal schar ani." Right now, obviously, there is a flipped relationship. Just as the employer is warned against robbing the wages of the poor workman, velo yakvenu, and not to delay payment. So too, the employee can't steal, right, even minimally, nor can he idle away his time at work. Right, and therefore be deceitful, because he's employed to do a job. You have to be very careful with your time. And this we'll see in a moment where this comes from, because the rabbis were so concerned about this that they even waived the obligation of the fourth blessing after meal. We'll come back to this in a moment. And it's not just that you can't be deceitful. You have to put in as much effort as you can. You need to work as hard as possible. Because Jacob said, I worked with all my strength for your father. And for that, God made him very wealthy. And in fact, this notion of being ethical in business, the Talmud puts such significance to this that in the third source, the Talmud imagines that when someone dies and he goes before the heavenly tribunal for his final accounting, he has six initial questions. Right? Before we get into details, there's sort of six overarching questions that tell us where you rank on the righteousness scale, right? You're getting your final checklist of how good you are. And one of those questions, in fact, the first one is, Amar Rava b'shashem achniz nadam ladin, omrim lo nasatam nadam emuna. Sorry, two words got cut off there. He said, did you conduct business faithfully? That's the first question that we're asked, according to the Talmud, when we go to heaven. And just to give one more narrative to frame it, the Talmud in Mako 24a, number 4, says, Pol tzedek kagon abba chilkiyo. When you work righteously, works righteousness, the paradigm of someone who worked righteously was this person named Abba Chilkiah. Now, who was Abba Chilkiah? So the Talmud in 5 tells the following story of how careful he was not to waste his employer's time. Abba Chilkiah barbre dechoni ha-me'agel aveh. Abba Chilkiah was the grandson of Choni HaMa'agel. So, you know, here I'm going to read in the English just to get the story. And he says, when the world was in need of rain, they would send sages to him and he would pray for mercy and rain would fall. Right? Abba Chilkiah was a miracle worker. He would pray, rain would come, it was great. So when there was a drought, they would send the sages to Abba Chilkiah and they would say, do us a favor, please pray on our behalf, bring rain. So once the world was in need of rain, and the sages sent a pair of sages to him so he would pray for mercy and rain would fall. They went to his house, but they did not find him there. They went to the field and found him hoeing the ground. So he wasn't at home, he was at work. And now at work, when they try to talk to him, a series of bizarre things happen. He does a series of bizarre things. So the first one that the Talmud says happened was they greeted him, but he did not return their greetings. They said, hello, and he was silent, he was dumb. So later on, right, they go on, there's all these different activities, all these different things he does that they don't understand. They come home, and Abba Chilkiah understands what's going to happen. He understands they're going to ask for rain. He doesn't want everybody to know that he's a miracle worker. So he goes and he prays before they can even ask. He comes out. He say, you know, now that I'm finished, you know, why'd you come? to pray for rain. He says, "Oh, well, you don't need me. God already sent rain." He said, "Ah, very funny. We know that you knew why we were coming and that you went and prayed. It's because of you. But, you know, as long as we're here, we really want to clarify, what was it that you were doing?" And they ask, and they say to him, "We know that the rain is coming on the master's account. However, let the master please say and explain to us these aspects of your behavior that are puzzling to us. What is the reason that when we greeted the master did not return our greeting?" Right? You're apparently this super righteous person. You pray and rain comes, but you're rude. Right? We come, we say good morning, nothing. Right? You don't greet us until you get home. Right? You're so righteous, so please explain. There must be a justification for this. So he said to them, "It's simple. I'm a day laborer, hired for the day, and I said to myself that I may not delay my work to answer you." And that's what he said, and he goes on. He said, "Because I'm working for somebody else, and if I took 2 seconds to say good morning, I'm not paid to say good morning to you. I'm paid to hoe, to plow, to do whatever in this guy's field." So, both from the biblical story and the Talmudic story, you see that the bar of commitment, in terms of care we have to take about our time, at least ab initio, is quite high. Right, that's sort of the starting point. And like we said with the story of Yaakov, the story of Jacob, it doesn't matter who your employer is. Okay. Now, in a moment we'll see that the rabbis didn't just say this as an ethical statement. Right? Sometimes the rabbis will exaggerate to get an ethical point across. In this case, the rabbis were so committed to this principle that they waived halachic obligations, meaning they even said, obligations you have to God, sometimes will waive in favor of your pre-existing obligations to your employer. Right? They put their money where their mouth is, so to speak, and they actually implemented. They said, "This is true. This is really, really true." And that's what we're going to see in a moment. Before we get there, though, right now that I've set this out, right, these stories probably strike us as strange for a series of reasons. So, why do these strike you as strange? And we're going to come back to why, at some level, they are. But, right, what's strange about these stories? Right, besides that, yeah?
There's no way Menschlichkeit behavior should be put on hold for any reason.
Right, so one is just weird, right? Why can't you be polite, right? You know, you would think you could be polite. And I push it farther, right? I think it's not just that we're all saying that as, you know, let's say employees. I think the feeling that we would all have is that our employers would want that as well. And the reality is that there's very few employers that if you ask them, right, before we get to the questions that there really are arguments about, meaning how much time is legitimate for you to use work for private phone calls or checking emails. Different employers really do have different standards on that. You will probably not find an employer in the world who will say, when your employees come in, don't say good morning. Either because they don't want to be a jerk, or because they know that all the studies, right, even if they are a jerk, they know all the studies in the world that will tell you that you know, morale at work is important for productivity, and if we forbade everyone from saying good morning, right, and we were really draconian about that, it would be counterproductive. And I think that's true. And that's why there's a few things that are important to keep in mind when we look at these. One is that exaggerated stories or exceptional stories, even if they don't tell us in the end of the day what we do on a day-to-day, they set the range, right? They sort of set the picture of what could be expected, right? Yeah.
But you have an employer, as you said, who could be unethical. You're still supposed to do the best that you can in your job. But what if the job that was assigned to you has an element of lack of ethics in it? For example, suppose you're working for somebody who's trying to swindle people to sign in.
Okay, so that is a cheer for another time, right? What you do when your employer is asking you to do things that are unethical, right? That's a different story. Then, right, then your obligation does not extend to that. Here we're talking about someone who they may be unethical or not nice, but they're just asking you to do a run-of-the-mill, right, nice, ethical, good job. An accountant, for example, right? Accountant, but whatever, right? Doesn't matter, right? Let's just say, right? A good, straightforward, honest job, right? you know, you can have any job, right? The job can be as simple and as honest as possible, and you'll have good employers and you'll have bad employers, right? It's not like, it doesn't matter what field, right? You can, this can be true in, if you're a rabbi, this can be true if you're an accountant, right? My father's a computer programmer, my mother's an epidemiologist, right? It can be true in every field, in the sciences, computers, business, rabbinate, doesn't matter. But we're talking about not that. Your job is totally ethical. The only question is, right, now, the Jacob case is a bit different, right? There, he actually was dishonest, but he still never asked Yaakov to do anything unethical. He just, you know, toyed with him. Okay, but what I think is going to be important, and we'll see, is that what we're going to do here for the first half is sort of set out what theoretically could be demanded. But what we're going to see is that perhaps the overarching principle after that, right, after if your employer, after principle one, which is if your employer demanded it, you know, it said work a 60-minute hour, 60-minute hour means 60 minutes, the second most important principle is going to be, and this should be expected because this is always true in monetary law, you are bound to the implied agreement, right? If the implied agreement is work 60 minutes to the hour always, so then that is demandable. But if no one does that, right, that's just not the community norm. That's not the, no one expects that, right? So halacha respects that as well. Meaning, this is all theoretically true. This is not true if your employer doesn't care. Right? If your employer says, in service of being a nice guy, or again, even if your employer isn't a nice guy, but your employer likes the notion of you know, company morale, and therefore allows a certain amount of leniency with phone calls and emails and whatever, what we're going to see is that's sort of the second overarching principle, which is all of this bends to what your employer actually expects. So, to now move on to source 6. As I said, the rabbis on this issue didn't just leave it in the ethical and the theoretical. They put their money where their mouth was, and they implemented laws which reflected their commitment to this notion that if you work for someone, so during the time that you're employed, your time belongs to your employer. They're paying you good money. Or not good money, doesn't really matter, right? You accepted the job, right? You're being paid now for your job, so now you're required to do your job. So, number six, the Talmud tells you as follows. Ha'umnin korin birosh ha'ilan v'rosh ha'nidbach man she'enan rasha'en lasot kein bitfila. If you have laborers who engage in their work, and they need to come to the morning prayers, so they say Shema, which only takes a few seconds. They can say it while they're still on the top of a tree, right? I don't know, whatever they're doing, they're picking fruit from the top of the tree, or they're on the top of a wall under construction. But if they need to daven Shemona Esrei, they need to daven sort of the morning prayer where you stand still for a few minutes. That you don't do on the top of a tree, right? You need concentration, right? Balancing, right? Top of the tree, bad idea. You won't concentrate, so then you go down and you do that on the ground. So the Gemara then continues. Tan Rabbanan, ha'umnin karin barosh ilana barosh ha'midbach u'mitpalin barosh ha'zayit barosh ha'te'ina. Ushar kol ha'ina, yordim lamata mitpalin u'balabayit b'enkach u'benkach yored lamata u'mitpalel lefi she'ein da'atom yoshevet alav. So the Talmud says as follows. With regards to laborers, this is on the top of the second page. The sages taught in a Tosefta, laborers, while engaged in their labor, may recite Shema while standing atop the tree or atop the course of stones in a wall under construction. And they may pray atop an olive tree or a fig tree, as those trees have many branches close together, so one could stand on them and focus properly while praying. In the case of all the rest of the trees, however, they must climb down and pray. However, the homeowner, who is self-employed, this was like a game trader in source sheets when they put the Koren Magid translation with the elucidation online for free, right? Because it just reads as a paragraph. In all cases, regardless of the type of tree, must climb down and pray as he will be able, he's unable to focus appropriately. So the Talmud tells you two rules. Nobody, employer or employee, when they have to pray, they're allowed to pray, can pray on the top of a, you know, sort of thin tree where they won't be able to concentrate because they'll be afraid that they're going to fall down. But if you're on a tree that has like a wide landing, so a self-employed person still has to go down to the ground, but an employee under those circumstances is allowed to take the time to pray, but he should pray remaining at the top of the tree, on that landing on the tree. Okay? Now, what do we see from the conjunction of those two laws? Right? Right, what do we see by, right,
time.
What?
Time.
So one is, right, that we care about the employer's time, but it's even more than that, right? It's, the Talmud is telling you that it is not ideal for anybody to pray even on the top of a safe landing on a tree, because you can't really concentrate. But the Talmud says, and therefore the Talmud says, if you're self-employed, you have to go down, because you have to concentrate when you pray to God. And even though we know that a prayer at the top of even a relatively stable tree is not ideal, we still tell an employee to stay up there. Now, we allow him to pray, but we tell him not to come down and waste the few minutes it takes to come down, but to pray at the top. Which tells you that on the one hand, right, hard and fast obligations to pray, right, are assumed that the employee is allowed to do. Right? The Talmud says you're allowed to pray. But the Talmud's willing to give in and say, but we're going to let your prayer be non-ideal. Not terrible, but not ideal. Right? Or, in fact, we'll encourage you, we'll mandate that you aren't allowed to come down and have an ideal prayer if it takes away time from your employer. Right? Which tells you, like I said, that the Talmud, the rabbis of the Talmud, put their money where their mouth was. They said, look, it's not just that we say it's important to respect your employer's time. We mean that even if you have an obligation to God, so you should still pray, but your prayer might have to be of a lesser quality. The type of thing that a self-employed person, we would say that's just unacceptable. For an employee, we say, you know what, it's acceptable. God will understand. God would rather you be honest and give in your maximum hour, the maximum time you can, the maximum effort you can to your employer, rather than pray better to him, right? That's quite a striking statement. And then I gave you, skip now to 7. In 6, sort of the Talmud continues on this in terms of Shema, but I just gave you the summary in Shulchan Aruch. The Talmud goes on as a long discussion about what exactly is the case, and then as a long discussion not just about prayer but about the blessing after eating, about Berkat HaMazon, about benching. And this is the summary. Shulchan Aruch says in 7. I'll just read it in the English because it'll get the point across. It says, laborers doing work for their employer should abbreviate the grace after meals so that they do not take themselves away from the work of their employer. How do they abbreviate the grace after meals? They recite the first blessing as established, and the second they begin with the blessing of the land. They included it, he who builds Jerusalem, and conclude with the blessing of the land. They do not recite the blessing of the one who is good and does good at all. Okay. Even if you don't know all the details of it, the basic is as follows. There's 4 blessings in the grace after meals. 3 of them are biblical. The 4th one is rabbinic. And the Talmud says that if you're an employee, at the end of your meal, even though you're obligated to bench, you're obligated to bless, we tell you, you have a truncated one. The 4th blessing, which is holy rabbinic, we waive, and we say you're not allowed to say it at all. And the 2nd and 3rd blessings, we create a truncated version of it. Right, so you say 2 blessings, which really are the themes of 3. But again, you see that the rabbis are saying your obligations to God will waive full-out rabbinic obligations entirely, and we will come up with sort of compromise ways of expressing biblical obligations so that you don't waste your employer's time. And it doesn't take so long. I mean, you know, I don't know how much intent they had when they blessed after meals in the time of the Talmud. Let's say they had a lot of intent. Let's say it took 4 minutes, right? Benching can take about 2 minutes. Let's say it took 4 minutes, right? Cutting off the 4th bracha, it's what, 100 words, 80 words, right? It takes 60 seconds, maybe 90 seconds, right? We're not talking a lot of time, and yet the Talmud says we're so worried about every last second that we will waive full-fledged rabbinic and sort of abridged biblical obligations so that you don't waste an extra 90 seconds of your employer's time. Now, they do know that this depends, right? In what circumstances does this apply? When they are receiving payment for their work besides the meal they are provided with. However, they're not taking payment, but are rather only provided with the meal they eat, they should recite all 4 blessings as established. The Shulchan Aruch then summarizes, it depends, right? If someone is paid a salary, this is true. If they're not paid a salary, they're, you know, being paid like a meal, so apparently the expectations were different, right? If all you were, I guess, The logic was that if people only paid you with your meal, at least you should enjoy that meal, right? I guess something like that. Or if the employer is eating with them, even if they're taking additional payment to payment in addition to the meal, they should recite all four blessings. Because if the employer's with you, if he decides, you know what, it's time to go back to work, he'll say it, right? If he's not pushing you, then clearly he doesn't care, which is where you already see this notion. Let me just finish the thought. While theoretically this is demandable, anytime it is not demanded, it's not demanded. And that becomes clear in just the second point here, that Shulchan Aruch continues. And number two, nowadays we always say all four blessings, for it's not normal for people to care. And presumably they were hired intending that they would say the four blessings as were established. Right? Shulchan Aruch tells you that once we know that part of this calculation is what does your employer actually care about, so then, nowadays, nobody cares. Nobody cares for the extra 90 seconds, right? Once they're already telling you you're allowed to go take a lunch break, right? Okay, let's assume they don't have a formal lunch break, right? Assuming if you have a formal lunch break, this is easy. You have a lunch break, do it during lunch. Okay, fine. If you don't have a lunch break, right? But the expectation at work is you're allowed to take some time for lunch, right? We don't exactly count the hours. So everyone understands if they're not giving you a set amount of time, it's because they expect you'll take a reasonable amount of time, right? Whether that's 15 minutes, 20 minutes, half an hour, I don't know, right? But the extra 90 seconds, right? Or the extra 30 seconds for the fourth blessing in benching, people don't care. And therefore, he tells you, well, again, your employer could demand it because no one really cares nowadays, so you're allowed. Yeah?
Just what is the avera that the rabbis are concerned with right now that they're obsessing over?
Yeah. It's geneva, it's theft, right? I mean, okay, it's good we should clarify that, right? What is the problem with all this? The answer is theft, right? You're being paid, take an easy case, you're being paid $60 an hour, right? The expectation, therefore, is you're being paid $1 a minute, right? And 50 cents for every half a minute. And if it takes you half a minute to say the fourth blessing, and you don't have to, so you're stealing 50 cents. And the general rule by theft is it doesn't matter how much you steal, it's called theft. Right? In halacha, there are no gradations. There isn't, right? There isn't petty larceny and grand larceny. There's just theft, right? That's it, right? There are different distinctions: theft which is done in stealth, theft which is not done in stealth, right? But there's no distinction in terms of quantity. Theft is theft is theft. It's always prohibited. And that's really the issue. That I think is why the Talmud is so obsessed about this, right? Or to put it differently, right? No one here would justify and say, look, the guy sitting in the next office doesn't really care. He doesn't need the extra quarter. So I can go into his wallet or into her purse and I can take out a quarter and just take it because they don't care. What difference does it make in their life? And yet, right, if they wasted 25 cents worth of their employer's time, people are like, they don't care. But if you realize you're being paid for a job and there's 25 cents worth of work that you're now not doing, you're expected to do, it's no less theft than going into their wallet and taking out a quarter. And that's exactly why the rabbis are so, right, are so obsessed about this, because they're trying to hone in on this and get you to realize that stealing time, right, stealing your employer's time when you're being paid, is theft. That's what it is. Now, right, you could try to start making fine distinctions. It depends. Are you paying by the hour? Are you a salaried worker? But realistically, that's not how it is either. Because, right, the fact is that even if you're a salaried worker, okay, so it's harder to determine how much you make an hour. But you still, in the end of the day, you're being paid for your time. And while you're at work, you're supposed to be working. Now, it may be different in terms of the expectations, right? And, sort of the second level that we've outlined here. But fundamentally, it isn't. Now, this notion that things change, though, in terms of expectations, appears throughout halachic literature. So I gave you a few more examples here. So, for example, it's pretty straightforward, so I'm going to summarize 8, 9, and 10 here. The Talmud says, look, you're allowed to pray during at work, but you shouldn't be the chazan. You shouldn't lead the prayers. It takes an extra minute. Mishnah Berura tells you in 9 that nowadays nobody cares. Right? They don't care. You're taking a mincha break. As long as your employer is okay with you taking a mincha break, he doesn't really care whether you're chazan or not. Right? Now, if you want to save the time, so you may do hecha kedush, you may do a quick, right, 5 minute shemoneh esrei is a year, 5 minute mincha is a year. Right? So, fine, but you know what? No one cares if you're the chazan, you're not the chazan, it takes you an extra 10 seconds to get to the front of the room. Right? Whatever, right? As long as we know you're quick, you're quick. The Magen Avraham tells you that even though technically you wouldn't have to daven with a minyan, with a quorum, nowadays when we say you can daven mincha, most people don't care. You're allowed to go take the extra minute, organize your mincha, right? If it's 5 minutes with a minyan, it would be 3.5 minutes without a minyan. Okay, the extra 90 seconds. Again, people don't really care. The Magen Avraham says, that's fine, yeah.
I would say the salaried worker doesn't make a slight difference. Since the salaried worker is basically there to do his job, whether he gets works longer or less, he gets the same work. So therefore, he can do whatever he wants, actually.
So that's not true. So that's what's not true. We have to be very careful here. There's two different types of salaried workers, right? There's, if you're paid by the job, right, then for all intents and purposes, for these purposes, you're like someone who's self-employed. Because, right, if you have a deadline and you have to finish a job, I don't mean that type of salaried employee. I mean a salaried employee who, right, is constantly working. They aren't paid by the hour. They're paid, you know.
Right, but they have their, even in that case, they still have what they have to finish their work.
Correct.
If they work an extra hour or not, they still pay the same amount.
So again, if that's true, right? So if that's true, then that's true, right? But you know, if there's no, you know, if it's not like, sure, if it's a day where, you know, all the tasks are done and your boss says go home, right, you don't have to then stay the extra 2 hours you normally stay because I have to sit here. There are people who do. There are companies who really are into this, right? There are companies who say, look, we pay you to be here from 9 to 5. Even if you have no work, just for discipline, we want you to sit at your desk. You can do whatever you want. You know, if you finish work at 3, there's nothing left for you to do. We still don't want you to go home. We want you to sit from 3 to 5. If that's what they want, and that's what they're paying you for, it's a bit weird, but I know there are, I know of places where they are obsessed with this. But there are other people, look, you're just not paid by the hour. But, you know, there's always more to do. Right, so you can't just say, "Ah, look, I did so much today." Right, so you know, the last half an hour I'm going to slack off, but there's more to do. No, if you're paid to be there 8 hours a day and to do your work, right? Halavai, people had an 8-hour day, right? That's we know that's a thing of the past. That's not the point. Okay, but yes, it employs, right? When I mean salaried, just that you're not being paid by hour, not someone who has tasks, right? If you have specific tasks, so when you finish your task, right? You know, like that's, you know, fine, that's for these purposes, I would say, self-employed. Now, again, so why if this is all true, right? Why if nowadays we're much more lenient, right, because people don't care, so why is it important to know how extreme it was in the time of the Talmud, where apparently employers did care? So the Aruch HaShulchan tells you, very simply, in 11, right, going over what the halacha could be, what your employer could demand of you, reminds you how important it is for you to work faithfully and to care about your employer's time. And you have to be very careful. Okay, and don't be unsettled by this, because work done with integrity is a lofty ideal. Now, how far does this go? So you'll see other advice. Say for Hasidim in number 12, for example, says that this obligation isn't just for the worker. It's also for people around. Let's say you're at work. You finished what you need to do for the day, right? So you just want to socialize, and you see somebody else at work who's, you know, still clearly in the middle of a task. But you don't care anymore, so what do? Right? You walk by, you know, you try, you know, you want to catch up with them for a few minutes, even though it's clear they have work to do, and they shouldn't be taking the time. So the Sefer Chasidim tells you in 12, that's your, you shouldn't do that. Al-Yishev Eitzel Sachir. Don't sit next to a hired worker. Afil Kshein Sachir Osepula. Shimilo Boshet Lomar Inli Panai. Right? Don't sit near him, because what's going to happen? You're going to pressure him. He's going to be uncomfortable. He's not going to want to say to you, she's not going to want to say to you, look, I don't have time to talk. I have work to do. This is the wrong thing to do. People don't want to do that. They want to be polite. So don't put people in that situation. Right? If you see that somebody's busy at work, and by you coming by and socializing, they're not going to get what, you know, get done what needs to be done. That's your problem, right? You can't do that. He says, if it's the type of person who will be rude to you and just say, look, I'm busy, right? Go away. So then fine, right? You can check in, right? You can say, how you doing? If you know, they'll say to you, look, I don't have time to talk. Come back to me, you know, at lunch. So then it's fine because, you know they'll say it to you. Fine. And then he tells you that those who feared God specifically wouldn't even converse or return greetings. Now he tells you right off the bat, right, therefore, that that standard that we saw of not even saying hello, that was never law. Right? He claims that that was never law. Right? That was just the righteous of the righteous wanted to make a point. But again, following the Aruch HaShulchan's point, even if it's only an act of righteousness to not even greet people, if it is, right, it's clear that you know, even if that's not the standard, the fact that that's even within the realm of conversation tells us how careful we have to be. And I gave you in 13, the Mesilat Yesharim really takes all these together and summarizes it, right? And he says, right, just to look at the first line, to highlight that it's about theft, right? Our sages of blessed memory also said, stealing from another person is worse than stealing from temple property. For in the former, the word sin precedes the word betrayal, and the opposite in the latter. Right? So the outline to all of this is that theft is really bad. And then he goes on and explains, in 8, he notes, they exempted the hired workers from blessings. And then at the end of that paragraph, he says, but how much more so for things that are optional? Right? Meaning, if these things are true of full-out obligations to God, then obviously it's true of a personal phone call or email or something like that, right? I mean, if... And then he goes on, he tells the story about Bechilkia, and in 10 he says, and what will they answer then, those who occupied themselves in their own pleasures and idled from work during the time they were hired out? Or if they were occupied themselves in their own affairs, each person to his own gain? The summary of the matter, one who is hired out to his fellow for any kind of work, behold, all of his hours are sold to his employer for the workday, as the sages stated, to hire oneself out is to sell oneself for the day, right? That's really what it is, right? You've now sold your day to your employer. Whatever time he takes for his own pleasure, whatever it may be, is completely guilty of stealing. And if his employer does not forgive him, he's not forgiven. For the sages already stated, sins between man and his fellow are not atoned for on Yom Kippur unless he's pacified his fellow. Not only that, he says, you know what? Let's say you think you're being so religious. You're taking a few minutes. You're not having a phone call. You're taking a few minutes to have a long prayer, right? 20 minutes. He said, don't think that's a good thing, right? The ethos is still true. He said, not only that, but if one does a mitzvah, a good deed during the time of his work, it'll not be considered a merit, but rather a sin in his hand, right? Don't be so righteous and say, no, you can't do your volunteer work during that time either, right? You have a commitment. Okay. So now just the ends here. So now how does this play out? Right? So usually, like I said, people don't care about benching. They don't care about praying. They don't care about that stuff. What do people really care about? And what, you Google, you'll find, I just Googled. And I took like the first two things that came up. People really do care about phone policy. Right? They do care about private phone calls. They do. And emails. Now, some employers are more draconian and others are less. But no one wants you idling away your day with phone calls. And people don't really want, even if you're not going to answer, to have it there. It's going to distract you. Right? Again, certain employers are stricter about this. Certain are less. So, but how do you balance, on the one hand, the fact that the Talmud really, really does care about how you spend your time, on the other hand, with the recognition that it's all based on what is commonly done, right? Common expectations, right? How do you balance that? So here, you don't look to halacha. There are no halachic sources that will tell you, right? How much time do people actually want you to be on the phone? So I just gave you a few practical guides that you'll find online, right? And they're obvious. One, check company policy, but also follow common courtesy, right? First one is if there's an official policy at work, that's what you are bound by. If there isn't an official policy, there's just an expectation that you won't abuse the privilege, that they're not draconian. So figure out what is the ethos of your workplace, and that's what you're bound to by halachic law. Right? He says some companies are stricter than others, so check with your boss or human resources department to get the rules straight, especially if you just started a new job. However, they know, don't just go by the rules, because maybe your office doesn't have a specific policy. Think about how you want to be treated in the workplace and how others behave. Does your boss have an opinion about personal phone calls or bringing cell phones into meetings? Action tip. Aside from checking with your HR department, be observant. Does your boss take a lot of personal calls? What do your workmates who have been working for the company for a long time do? Follow their leads and use common sense. Right? And that's really, you know, that's good advice. And they note, part of this means, right, if necessary, let family and friends know your work hours. Right? Meaning if the company's expectation is, look, you can take phone calls in case of emergency, so then tell your people who call you. I have a sister-in-law. She's very, right, her boss cares. So she tells all of us, these are my work hours. This is when, if you call me during those hours, I'm going to assume it's an emergency. Right? It's a type of job where you always need to be on. And that's what she does, because that's what you have to do. Right? Tell people, look, I'm not available during these hours. If your employer doesn't care, right, your employer is fine because they want company morale to be high. They want people to feel a little bit at ease. They're okay with a little bit, so don't abuse it. Right? But you really do need a check. And at 15, I note, right, that one of the reasons that people don't care, which I've come back to, is that on the one hand, employers do not pay employees to converse with friends and family. On the other hand, a cell phone policy generally should not be so restrictive as to prohibit all uses of a personal cell phone. Employees may need a check on their children, for example, or may need to attend to personal matters during business hours, such as doctors or pharmacists. So what should everybody do to make sure that everyone's on the same page? Communicate your expectations, right? Again, you don't need a rabbi to say this, but that's really what halacha would demand, right? If all of this, in the end of the day, is framed by expectations, so you got to figure out what the expectations are, right? And then, as we've seen, on the one hand, you'll be true to the commitment that you have to your employer. On the other hand, right, as times change and expectations change, right, you won't, right, you'll be on the same page. Yeah?
I'm curious what's meant by emergencies.
I have no idea. That really, you've got, you know, you got to ask. I'm not an employee. I'm an employee, not an employer. I don't know what emergencies are. I don't know. Different people have different expectations, right? Some people mean life and death. Some people mean, you know, my kid has it needs to come home from school, right? Some people, you know, different people have different expectations. It depends on what you work as, right? You know, it depends how important it is for you to be there, right? Like my father-in-law works on critical backup systems for, electric, the generators for like hospitals and things like that. There, it's got to be a pretty big emergency. If, the hospital's having an emergency, you have to have a bigger emergency, right, than to let the hospital go without electricity, right? That's a problem for me. Okay, so, I know it'd be crushing if people, I had to run out in the middle of a shear, but people might live, right? You know, they're different, but I think it depends on expectations. I think, I hope. Okay, the last thing I'm going to note, here, I'm not going to have time to read it all inside, is that this notion in halacha doesn't just go to wasting time. It actually goes as well, and this is something that people really are not sensitive to at all, is minimizing your effectiveness during work. Right? What happens, let's say you're perfect at working 60 minutes to the hour, but you don't sleep at all. You just don't sleep, so you're exhausted, so you are not putting in as much effort as you can. So that's also in halacha forbidden. Because it's not just that you have to put in the minutes. You have to check off the clock. You're supposed to... I'm just going to read it, okay? In 16, right? The Shulchan Aruch tells you, a worker is not permitted to work at night and hire himself out during the day. He may not starve or torture himself through food deprivation or feed the food that he saved for his son, because this is theft of the work of his employer, right? If you work two jobs and therefore are not effective at your jobs, that's also theft. Right, even if there isn't technically a non-competition clause or a non-whatever, even if there isn't technically a clause, the expectation is that you come to work and you're conscious. If every day you binge watch whatever TV show all night, every night, and you come to work and you're working, but it takes you 5 minutes to write a paragraph because your head is, right, is foggy, that's also theft. Right, you're expected to work, and for these reasons. There even, I gave you in 17, I found this just online, there's a modern rabbinic thinker who said that even to go on a diet, like a starvation diet or something like that, that weakens you, right, for cosmetic purposes, should also be prohibited, right? If you are at work and you go on, I don't know, whatever the newest fad diet is, right, and it throws you, you go on some, no carb, ketone, whatever is keto, right? And you have no energy for a week. So that week, right? Now he distinguished between health You know, if your doctor tells you, so most employers will say, look, you know, the doctor tells you you need to go on this diet, fine. But if it's for cosmetic purposes, so take a vacation, right? But this is something that people don't take into account. Now, again, the Rajba goes farther in 18, and the Rajba says you shouldn't wake up too early in the morning, right? If you're working for someone, don't say, I'm a morning person. I love waking up at 4 in the morning, but, I hate afternoons, right? I'd rather be up in the morning, but by 12, you're dead, right? You can't do that, right? Part of this discussion, now this is much harder to quantify, right? But halacha, again, is so insistent that when you are an employer, you have a certain commitment that they say you shouldn't fast in such a way, you shouldn't, not sleep in such a way that you're not an effective employee. Now, I gave you just in 19 that even this as well is depend on the custom. And I gave you just Shulchan Aruch here who outlines this, right? One who hires workers and said them work from dawn till dusk, cannot force them to do though if that's not the custom in the area, even if he adds to their salary. This is because he did not make the stipulation the moment he hired them. And the Ramah adds, meaning that it's not the case, that there is not a particular custom in the city, or that he said to them, I hire you according to the Torah law, etc. And then he skipped down. If he came from a place where the custom is to work from dawn till dusk, to a place where it's not the custom, or the reverse, we go according to the custom of the place when they were hired. Meaning in Halacha, there's sometimes it's going to be ambiguous, and it's very complicated to figure out in ambiguous cases how we figure out the norm. So I don't want to get into it, but the last thing I want to close on, and then I'll turn off the recording, you can ask me questions, I'll stick around, right, is that again, the first, most of the time we've seen that halacha really cares about, you devote your time to your job, right, in line with expectations. The second point that halacha adds, which is, people don't articulate, but is even more demanding, is even when it's not like, even possible for the employer to look at you and say, you didn't work, you did put in the hours, you're hired to do a good job, right? If you say, look, I'm hired to be there 9 to 5, right? And therefore, it doesn't matter that I don't sleep and I don't eat and I don't take care of myself such that I'm totally not effective at work. If your employer is going to, if it's the type of thing your employer would care about, a normal employer would care about, you're not allowed to do that either, right? Halacha's basic perspective is when you have a job, you are ethically required to put in as much effort and as much time in good faith as you can. The type of thing that a normal employer would expect you to do, right? Take a, diet in a reasonable way, diet when it's necessary, that's fine. But to starve yourself, not sleep, again, that's part of stealing time because now your time is not as effective. When your employer hired you, they didn't expect that you would be, right, that you would only get 2 hours worth of work in an 8-hour day. So that is the basic perspective that halacha has. That again, on the one hand, we really, really, really care about the time and the effort you put into work. When you take a job, we take that very seriously. On the other hand, right, we do balance expectations, which is why employers and employees should make sure that their expectations are clear so that everyone is committed in the most honest and upfront way on both sides.